welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly O'Brien. As a naturopathic doctor, I help you to transform your health and amplify your energy with nutrition, natural medicine, and neuroscience. Each week, I share life-changing health habits and mindset shifts to help you break through the struggle and become the person you know you are meant to be. Are you ready to let your health and happiness come naturally? It's time to own your health and live a life you love. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. I am so excited to have you guys here listening today because I think you're going to really love this episode. I had the opportunity to interview Martin Parnell, who I had met through the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers in Calgary. And I have to say, he is definitely one of the most inspirational people that I have ever met. I think you are going to really love hearing his story. Not only has he accomplished really big goals for himself, but he's also overcome a lot of adversity and personal challenges in his life, and it makes him really human. You are going to love the show. We dive into things that will really help you when it comes to setting big goals for yourself. So we talk about Martin's strategies and how he makes these really huge goals that he sets for himself more approachable. And we also touch on things during the interview, like what you can do today if you're feeling stuck and overwhelmed with your health. So basically how you can start going and start taking these smaller steps that will get you on the path to having the confidence to reach for these bigger dreams. So without further ado, let's dive in to the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Healthy Life Redesign Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly O'Brien, and today I'm very excited to be interviewing Martin Parnell, who is the author of the books Marathon Quest and Running to the Edge. At age 47, Martin had only just signed up for his first 5-kilometer running race, and now 15 years later, at age 62, he has an incredible number of accomplishments to his name, including having run 250 marathons in 1 year and having set 5 Guinness World Records. Now, as an international keynote speaker, Martin inspires people worldwide to overcome obstacles and to achieve our full potential by setting big goals in order to achieve results that we never thought possible. Martin, both your story and your relentless pursuit of your goals are incredibly inspiring, and I'm so grateful to have you on the Healthy Life Redesign podcast with me today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Kimberly. Great to be here.
Martin, I know that you haven't always been an athlete, and I'd love for you to share your story with our audience as to how it was that your quest and your passion for running first began.
Oh, absolutely. And to be frank, I was never really that interested in running at all. And the only reason I started was one wintry December day in 2002. I was living in Sudbury, Ontario, and I got a phone call from my younger brother, Peter. And after a bit of small talk, he challenged me to a marathon. And to be honest, I didn't hesitate. I said yes. But the problem was, you know, I didn't run. And, you know, at 47 years old, I was kind of thinking, boy, this is maybe a bit late to start. And, you know, one of the reasons for me is my relationship with sport. As a child, I was known as a huggable. You know, I was a bit of a big lad and always got picked last, you know, for the soccer team, the rugby team, or the cricket team. And so, you know, I've never really excelled in any kind of sport, to be honest. But I love sport. Mum and dad played sport with us kids, whether it's tennis or table tennis. I consider myself a reverse Olympian at the moment. We got the Winter Olympics going on, but I'm the total opposite. They're very good generally at one sport, and I'm kind of rubbish at lots of sports. So, you know, when my brother phoned me, I said yes. I mean, because you can't turn down a challenge. Then I realized I'd better start doing something. So that night I went out and I ran 1K out and 1K back. And to be honest, Kimberly, it was absolutely awful. I was not happy.
So it wasn't something that came naturally to you right from the get-go?
Not at all. I was dressed. That particular night I had my tennis shoes on. I had a pair of cotton pants, a fleecy top. I had a toque and big mitts. And I came back from this 2K run absolutely soaking wet. And of course, you know, marathon's 42.2, so I had another 40K to go. So I was not feeling good. And at that point, I realized, you know, I needed help. I had to get help if I wanted any chance of even turning up at the marathon.
So what did that process look like for you from that first 1 kilometer run until the time that you ran your first marathon? What was that journey like and the time frame for you?
Well, so the phone call was in December, and the marathon that my brother had selected was the Calgary Marathon in July of next year. Okay. So it was 8-9 months. I mean, it wasn't a lot of time. He was really putting it to me, you know, he was really putting the challenge down. So what I did, I joined, and I think I've learned, this is one thing I've learned on many things. When you take a challenge, get help. So I joined the Sudbury Rocks, a running club. And I went along one Saturday morning and met a wonderful bunch of people. And they slowly introduced me to what to wear, what to eat, what to drink. We started running longer. I did 5K, I did 10K. And by April, I was up to my first half marathon in Ottawa. I ran 21.1K. So it was a pretty steep learning curve.
It sounds like it. And I know running has become a huge part of your life, really part of your identity. And I'm wondering, looking back, like in those early days, did you feel it becoming something that you were passionate about yet at that time? Or did that occur later on in the journey?
Well, I found a big change in the first 4 months of getting into this running. I lost 20 pounds. I think my eating improved. But the other thing, Kimberly, that it did was really fill a gap, a major gap that I had in my life. A year earlier, my wife, Wendy, had died of cancer. Wow. And it was a huge, obviously, I was in a very dark place and I needed something to get me through it. And, you know, whether it's synchronicity or whatever, but when I got that call from my brother and started running, I went out and I was running hard. And I think the physical exercise helped me both physically and mentally. So it definitely filled the gap and it gave me something to focus on, which helped along the journey.
Wow, that's really powerful, Martin. That's a lot to have gone through. And I mean, that's amazing that really a year later, having that call from your brother and having something that could pull you up from that space. So it sounds like initially running was really something that gave you a new direction and something to focus on in a more positive way. Have you ever looked back now and wondered, what if you or brother had not challenged you to that marathon, how your life could be different? Is that something that's come up for you?
Isn't that a big question, Kimberly? Yeah, I mean, that's the $64,000 question. As I said, it certainly, I don't know what would have happened, because I wouldn't have been running because I had no interest. Honestly, I would not have, you know, I would have not have gone that route. I don't know. It's no good even, yeah, it's even guessing. But in life, sometimes whether you knowingly or you just go ahead with it and say yes, they will change the direction of your life. And there's no question. I mean, for me, it's been a huge change. My background is I'm a mining engineer. I worked 25 years in the Canadian mining industry in Kimberley and in Yellowknife, in the Territories and in Sudbury, Ontario. And really, I've had a huge change over the last 15 years, you know, moving to the professional speaking and writing the book. So I don't know what to say. It's, you know, never think it's over. I mean, we can always make changes as we go along.
Yeah, I think that's such an important takeaway. And for you, I really admire how you did just act on faith and take your brother up on that challenge, because it's easy to get scared too. That is a big thing to sign up for, going from not running at all to agreeing to do a marathon in that kind of time frame. So what do you have any strategies that you use? I'm sure that's been a recurring theme for you, because you very regularly set these really huge goals for yourself. So when you initially set that goal, does it feel scary to you? And if so, how do you work through that fear in order to get going?
Yeah. So when I accepted that challenge, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. So with the help from the folks at the running club, I sort of, you know, figured out some of the things I needed to do, but I really didn't have a strategy. I just wanted to get the mileage in and then turn up at the start line in July to the Calgary Marathon. So that's kind of how it went. But over the years, as I've taken on bigger goals, you mentioned the 250 marathons in 1 year, the 5 Guinness World Records, and it just, you know, it continues, because for me, I'm very kind of goal orientated. I just mentioned one strategy that I've used is I chunk things down into 10-minute blocks. So when I run, 9 minutes and walk for one. And I really don't think beyond that. And that's kind of, especially when you get into the marathon and longer distances. And I find that's a really useful tactic when you take on any project. Chunk it down into small pieces, do a piece, make sure you do that 10-minute piece or whatever. And then at least it's a stepping stone along the way. So the whole concept of breaking it down, chunking it down, and you know, not getting overawed by the whole thing has been a constant in what I do.
Yeah, I love that. Very powerful strategy for those big goals and to help with your running. On that note, so when I think it for you, reading your book, Marathon Quest, which is a really great book, and I recommend that everyone pick that one up as well as the new books you've got coming out. But when you ran the 250 marathons in a year, that was for an organization called Right to Play. And so I know that play and helping kids is something that's really important for you in your own life. And I believe that was inspired on a bicycle trip across Africa, which was another pretty amazing feat, I must say, as well, because we're talking from the top to the bottom, which was, is that 10,000 kilometers? Am I right that you had cycled?
Yeah, pretty close, Kimberly. Yeah, 12,500 from Cairo to Cape Town.
Wow. So I'm leaving some out. So can you tell me a little bit about that journey for you and how that inspired what you were later to do with the 250 marathons?
Yeah, absolutely. And it again, it's a bit of a transition story. So when I started running, it was very much for me. It was very much about running for times, trying to qualify for Boston. And so it was a very personal journey at that point. Then I, and through this transition, I really wanted to see Africa and decided to sign up for a cycle trip from Cairo to Cape Town. Again, that's a huge step, but I felt reading the perspective and the group I was traveling with that, you know, maybe I could do it. But what happened there was I thought it would be very much Kilimanjaro, the Rift Valley. What happened is I ended up playing sports with children all the way through Africa, whether it was soccer, table tennis, basketball. I ended up just doing sport with these kids, and I could just see the absolute joy of these children who in many situations are in a dire state. It's not a good situation. But the moment you bring a soccer ball out or a basketball or something, everything changes. And over that 4-month period, so it was 4 months, 6 days a week cycling, 100K a day. And as I say, you know, dropping the bike and playing sports with the kids, I just saw the power of sport and play. And as this journey seems to be, that introduced me to Right to Play. And they're an amazing organization. They use play and sport to teach children life skills, leadership, team building, conflict resolution. And I realized that I wanted to try and give back through my running. Initially running, then I wanted to give back, use my running to help these children and help Right to Play. And so initially it was running marathons and doing triathlons. But then this idea of running 250 marathons in 1 year to try and raise $250,000 came about. So that was a big thing.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. That's just a little bit of a commitment to bite off there for you, Martin. How did you feel going through that? And I know that there was some struggles and some challenges. Of course, that's a lot of impact on the body and a lot to keep up with. I'm sure there were some days you were pretty sore. How did you keep going through that?
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing journey, Kimberly. And again, it's, you know, you mentioned about having just going on faith. And I'll be honest, I've done that more lately than I did when I was younger. I think sometimes you just got to try stuff. You know, we talk about success and failure. Well, for me, I really don't believe in failure. I don't really know what it means, because I sort of live by what Nelson Mandela says. He said, always win. No, he says, I never lose. I either win or learn. And that's strictly what I'm, you know, what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm going to do half this stuff. I mean, and some of it I haven't done and some I do, but I'm not really that concerned. I'm going to give it my best shot. And so when I made this commitment to try and run 250 marathons in a year, I mean, there were huge things. There was the weather, there was fitness, there was sickness. I didn't know what would happen. So it was very much, you know, day at a time. There were some struggles. I had an injury on my leg that stopped me for 2 weeks. But really, you know, what it came down to was, and we talked, you and I, the podcast talked about the why, you know, why I was doing this. Mm-hmm. And for me, the why was I had made a commitment to these children to try and raise this money. That was it. So, you know, in the middle of the year in 2010, I was halfway through, but nobody was running with me. The funds weren't coming in. And my wife, Sue, said, Martin, is it worth it? And I was wondering, what am I doing? Like, this is crazy. But I'd be in, you know, I'd be in my bed and I'd hear the rain pounding against the window. But then I thought, okay, I've made the commitment to the kids. If I can get out of bed, then I can try and run a marathon. And really, every day was like that. You know, Kimberly, it was just getting out of bed, one foot in front of the other, just to see where you ended up. So, but it was that why. Without that strong why, I would not have done it. If it was just for me, to be honest, I don't think I would have done it, because it just wouldn't have been worth it.
Right. So it sounds like having that support team behind you, and then also having something bigger that you're part of, is what kept you accountable to the mission and on board. And I know also you included kids as part of that mission, and you were doing, was it one time per week you were doing one of the marathons at a school and involving the kids?
Oh, absolutely. It was the absolute highlight of the year. I ran once a week at a school. I ran at 60 schools throughout Calgary, Cochrane, and a couple up in Yellowknife. I ran with over 12,000 children from kindergarten to grade 12. And the way I did it, I went to the school, I talked to the children at an assembly, and then I'd run 100 times around their soccer field, around and around and around. And the kids would join me. You know, they'd join me in the morning, lunchtime, and at the day. But what really blew me away was at the end of the day, they would give me their loonies and their toonie pocket money to help the other kids, because they really understood how lucky they were, to have their school, their homes, their parents, the toys. And when I told them about other children who couldn't play because they had to carry water for 6 to 8 hours a day, or they were in refugee camps where they couldn't go outside, boy, I tell you, kids get it. I mean, they don't carry a lot of baggage. They see it black and white. And they were mad. I mean, they were mad that these other children couldn't play. So, yeah, over the year, that was the absolute highlight of, you know, running, and got me through a lot.
Yeah, and in regards to getting through a lot, you've had some health challenges that have come up since then as well. So I know that's been another struggle for you. And so I'm hoping that we can touch on things also from a health standpoint for you. If you can tell us about that, and also touching on the why, this is a number of questions, but do you have a why that keeps you on track in regards to your health? Maybe it's for the running, but can you touch on that for me?
No, absolutely. And you know, getting towards the health side and so on, I had a huge wake-up call with this incident I had in Winnipeg. This was back in early 2015. I went to Winnipeg to speak at a conference, at a parks and recreation conference. And I'd had a migraine the week before. I didn't feel good. My doctor had given me some Tylenol. I went there, but the organizer, Suzanne, when she saw me, said, "Martin, you do not look good. We got to get you to a hospital." So she drove me to the Grace Hospital in Winnipeg. They did a CAT scan, and they found a massive clot on the brain. And right away, they put me into an induced coma. Mm-hmm. My wife, Sue, gets a call from the hospital. You know, she was expecting me home in 2 days. She gets a call saying, "Come to Winnipeg. We don't know what's going to happen." So Sue jumped on a plane and came out. Was in the induced coma for 24 hours. I came out of it. And suddenly, from running these multiple marathons, I need help to go the 20 feet from the hospital bed to the washroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, my world was totally turned upside down. Over the next 2 weeks in Winnipeg, I was given morphine, drugs, and slowly they kind of stabilized things. And then they gave me the green light to come back to Calgary, because one of the top neurosurgeons is in Calgary. So when I was leaving Winnipeg, the specialist just before I left said, "Martin, you could have died twice." And I said, "What do you mean twice?" He said, "Well, the first time was because of the clot on the brain. If you hadn't have come in when you did, in another week, you would have been dead. The clot would have totally blocked all the passages and you would have had bleed on the brain." I said, "Well, you know, thank heavens for where I was, you know, for Canadian medicine. I mean, very fortunate." I said, "What about the second time?" "Well," he said, your blood pressure went through the roof, and you was huge strain on your heart and your organs, and you could have had a massive heart attack. But because you were relatively fit, your heart took it." And you know what? That shook me to the ground, because for me, running meant either myself or running to give back. But I realized that running and fitness is the absolute best life insurance any of us can have. I'm not knocking, you know, doctors and pills and stuff, but if we can keep ourselves relatively fit, that will deal with so much. And as I get older, the question for me and for my generation, I'm 62, is not if something's going to happen, it's when. And that's the reality. And so for me, it's given me a different view on health and fitness, Kimberly.
Thank you for sharing that story, Martin. That really is a testament to the power that health and fitness has to keep you going through that. Because like you said, inevitably, there are things in our health that do come up. I mean, we're not invincible, but having those practices and that level of fitness and that level of health that can coast us through those things can be so important. And on that note, first off, are you running now? I'm guessing probably not to the same degree that you were, but is running still a big part of your life at this point?
Well, it is, Kimberly. And I mean, if I'm happy to talk about this, so I've taken on a new challenge.
I'd love to hear about it.
Which probably doesn't surprise you. So I did get back running again, and I do want to talk about it at some point, what inspired me to get going. But let me just share with you where I am right now. I've done a lot of long distance running in the past, and so I decided it was time to change things up a little bit. And so I've hired a coach, and I have a project called 62 Beats 47. Now, in 2003, at the age of 47, I set my personal best times in the 5K, the 10K, the half marathon, and the marathon.
Okay.
And so 15 years later, this year, with a coach, I'm attempting to break all four personal bests.
What? I love this.
Yes, I know, Kimberly, yes. 62 beats 47. And so I'm learning lots. I've got a guy in Cochrane who is an amazing coach. We're doing a bunch of different stuff with interval training, hill repeats, tempo running. Also, he's big on data collection. So we're doing a lot of analysis on power output, strength, and so on. So it's like I've been reinvigorated with the running. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, that's huge. I didn't know about this project, so I love hearing about that. When are the races? Is that coming up later this year? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first five, so we're doing it basically in order, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and marathon. So at the moment, the 5K is a race in Airdrie, just a town not too far from here, in the middle of April. The 10K is a 10K in Calgary, which is a pretty fast 10K in June. The half marathon is going to be the Edmonton half marathon, which I think is in August. And the marathon, we're heading to the States, to Sacramento. Ah. We're going to do the Sacramento marathon, yeah, on December the 2nd. Apparently, that's a fast course. And what I said to my coach is, look, I need every edge I can get. I want the fastest route. I want the wind behind me.
Yep.
You know, any edge I can get, Kimberly, to try and beat those times. So it's kind of a fun thing to do. And I just think, again, no matter what age you are, it's good to shake it up, change it up, and kind of challenge yourself.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, so you were featured actually in Chris Guilbeault's book, The Happiness of Pursuit. And I can see why, because it sounds like the pursuit of these goals is one of the things that it sounds like it really keeps you going, because there's always seemingly something over the next hill for you. In regards,
literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. one more question in regards to goals. So I know that when people are setting health goals or fitness goals or whatever it may be, there seems to be a lot of debate as to if people should set SMART goals that they know will be achievable and just to stack those, or setting risky goals that are pushing the envelope a little bit more. I kind of have a sense of which way you lean, but what's your insights on that, Martin?
Yeah, for me, I take a different, and it's all an attitude thing. So I talk about having a finish the race attitude. That's kind of my keynote presentations. I talk about setting goals, overcoming obstacles to achieve your full potential. And the way I look at it is, and it's the way I've evolved, is I set really goals that I don't know if I can do. So really any goal I set, there's a 50-50 chance of not doing it. But I think what helps me is my definition of failure, because I don't believe there is any.
Right.
The only failure is not starting it. That's the only failure. So once I'm into it, I'm going to give it my best shot. I don't know where it will lead, but I think I've learned, I'm a little concerned where when we set the barriers or the blockages right at the beginning. So we set this, you know, barrier. We set this kind of specific fixed thing that I'm not saying we, you know, guarantee we can do it, but we sort of hedge our bets. And then we, you know, give it a go. I almost think that's kind of a lose-lose, because if you don't do it, oh my gosh, I didn't do what I was expected to do. If you do it, who's to say there isn't more? So why don't we just say to heck with it? Let's kind of shoot for something that, you know, there's a chance. And I use 50-50, a 50-50 chance of doing it, and then see what happens. Because Kimberly, from my experience over the last 15 years, it's crazy what we can do and that we don't even think we can. So yeah, I know I'm not going along with the trend here, but that's how I feel. I feel set it up and give it a shot.
I like it. I think it takes the pressure off of people. So I feel like people often put a lot of pressure on themselves when they are setting these goals, and it's a must achieve. But it sounds like you look at it almost more like play and like a game to see how far you can push yourself, and then kind of releasing the attachment to the outcome. So
exactly. And you just said a comment there, releasing the attachment to the outcome, like whatever it is, it is. And you know what? I really don't beat myself up. Like, I'll give it a shot. This, you know, 62 beats 47. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to try and learn as much as I can, do my best. And there it is. Okay. You know, I'm sorry if I've disappointed somebody, but that's just too darn bad. I'm going to give it a go. You know, it's something I want to try, and we'll move on. So I really don't have huge attachments from a personal point of view to these goals. It's a little more pressure when I've made a commitment to the kids, or I, you know, that's a little different. Then it's full on. But you know, that's how I view it.
Yeah, I love it. Just upping the accountability. So, Martin, I know you're up to some new exciting projects. You've always got something amazing on the go, but you've been doing some work with something called the Secret Marathon. Can you tell our audience more about what that project's looked like for you over the last couple years, your travels, and what's coming up for that?
Oh, absolutely, Kimberly. I'm just so pumped. Let's go back to early 2015. I had the clot in the brain. I came back from Winnipeg to Cochrane, just outside of Calgary. And basically, I could do nothing for about 3 months. I had double vision because of the pressure of the clot on the optic nerve. And the specialist said, Martin, you got to just take these drugs and sit on your couch and kind of look out the window. So for 3 months, I did nothing. That was it. I had great support from the family and friends. Then the doctor said, okay, you can start walking. So I started walking. I did the Calgary Marathon 5K, walking it. But still, I was pretty depressed. It was not good. But then in October 2015, my wife Sue gave me an article from the Guardian newspaper. And the story was about a young woman named Zainab who had become the first ever Afghan woman to run a marathon. And I was kind of shocked. Like, she was the first woman ever. And in fact, when I read her story, I was totally blown away for the challenges she had to handle. For us runners, when we're training, it's things like hydration, nutrition, maybe the weather, blisters. But her challenges were verbal and physical abuse when she ran in the streets of Kabul. People would yell at her, you're a prostitute, get off the streets, a woman shouldn't be running. And they would throw rocks and bits of concrete at her to stop her running. And so what Zainab did, she went back to her house and she ran inside her walled garden, her 20 by 20 walled garden, and she had trained for hours running round and round and round. And in October 2015, there was a marathon, the very first ever marathon in Afghanistan, in a town called Bamiyan, just 140 kilometers northwest of Kabul. And there were 60 marathon runners, 10 were international runners, the other 50 were Afghan men, except for one Afghan woman, and she became the first woman to do that. When I read this, and I think my wife Sue was, I don't think she thought this would be the outcome, but I said to Sue, Sue, if I get better, and if I can run again, and if I can run a marathon, I'm gonna go to Afghanistan next year and run the marathon and support the girls and women. And 1 year later, I was on a plane to Kabul.
Wow, Martin, that's incredibly inspiring. How did that marathon go?
Well, again, another story, and this is just how things turn out. I went there. I met the girls and women who were training for the marathon. There was also a 10K race, which was very well supported by schoolgirls, Afghan schoolgirls. But I met a young woman. Her name is Kubra, and she was training for the marathon. But she had had to stop 4 months earlier because four of her friends were killed in a terrorist bomb attack at her school. And so she hadn't trained. We got chatting and she wanted to do the marathon, but she really felt she couldn't because she hadn't done the training. So I said, well, Kubra, why don't we run together and let's see if we can run the marathon and come in under the 7 hour time limit. So Kubra and I headed off on the marathon. She had cramps. She suffered. There was so much going on, but we eventually finished in 6 hours and 52 minutes. And it was, you know, Kimberly, it was unbelievable. Working and helping Kubra, working together for her to run her marathon. And so I've maintained a relationship with Kubra, but also with the organization Free to Run, who is helping girls and women in conflict areas through sport, through running and through other sports. And so we've been fundraising for them. We fundraised for a kayak trip they did last year, first time ever. A group of girls and women went kayaking in Afghanistan. And this year we fundraised to install a skating rink for the girls and women over there in Afghanistan. So yeah, it's an incredible story. And sort of one outcome is we took a film crew with us. When we went to Afghanistan, we took a film crew and we're making a film called The Secret Marathon. And the reason it's called The Secret Marathon is we could not say the date or the route of the marathon before we did it because of the threat of terrorism. So this literally is a marathon that, you know, nobody talks about, and you won't see it on social media, the date and the route until the very kind of day of the event. So very excited to get the movie made and do an International Women's Week right across Canada, in 10 cities across Canada. We are collaborating with the Running Room, and there will be the Secret Marathon 3K race. Super excited about that, Kimberly.
Yeah, that sounds phenomenal. To all the listeners out there, definitely make sure to check that out as well. In the wings, we're waiting for a new book that I know you will be releasing eventually on the topic. So lots more to come from you in that regard, which I know I'm definitely really excited about, and seeing as how you've done all of this amazing work in the past to support the Right to Play organization, I just think it's amazing the work that I can see being done through you now for the women and the people in Afghanistan, and really the rights of all, because I know that's what it comes down to for you. So thank you, Martin. I know that in the audience, the people listening, I'm sure everyone's feeling really inspired and motivated based on your story, but I think a lot of the people may still be really in the really early stages of their own journey. And I'm wondering if they're in a zone where they're feeling stuck in their life or stuck in their health and overwhelmed as to what to do next, what would you recommend that they can do first and foremost just to get that initial forward momentum?
Yeah, absolutely, Kimberly. One thing that I tend to go to, and I share it with a lot of audiences, in life, you don't have to do a lot, but you've got to do something. Mm-hmm. And I ask the audience, what is your something in 2018, whether it's for you personally or whether it's to help others? I think we get overawed. And I think part of the issue is we hear about so many accomplishments, so many people doing amazing stuff. And I think, you know, we all get to, how on earth can I do that? You know, whether it's Olympians or, you know, folks climbing Everest. And I think the fact of the matter is, it's all about taking that first step. So whether it's your health, whether it, you know, fitness, whether it's helping others, whatever you're starting, it could be, you know, learning a new language or playing a musical instrument. The key is get started, do something and try it, and really don't worry about the outcome of what you're trying. Okay. It really doesn't matter. To be blunt, you know, people really don't care
right.
about what you do. I mean, I hate to say that,
yeah,
but that's the reality. I mean, just go and do it, try it. You'll learn something. If it succeeds, great. Try another step. If it doesn't quite work out, you've learned a lot. So I think we should be more in the zone of actually doing stuff rather than continually reading about stuff. And no disrespect, Kimberly, or just listening to stuff, or like, go and try it. I mean, it's a big world out there. People want you to succeed. I mean, that's one thing I've learned. Yeah, you'll get some naysayers, but if you try something, people want you to get there. When I put stuff out on social media, all this wacky stuff, I get amazing response. Good for you. Give it a go. And so I think we've got to kind of let go of the change, let go of the baggage, and just kind of just, you know, be fair to ourselves. Let's not be so harsh on ourselves.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to work on incorporating your advice more and more myself. I feel like that's something that everyone really needs to hear, is, again, kind of back to what you had been saying before, take the pressure off. Look at it as an experiment and just get started and see what happens. And I know when I'm working with people on their health or whatever goals we may be talking about, the motivation that I see that really comes through for people is not necessarily that very initial moment that they're starting, but it's once they are going and they're learning and they're seeing results. And again, it's not always positive results. Sometimes things don't turn out the way that they intended, but it's just about course correcting, taking what they learned and moving forward. But I feel like it's when people are in that moment when they're really stuck, the best thing that you can do is just, like you said, just do something, pick something and take that step forward. So thanks for that, Martin. I know that'll resonate with a lot of people. Where can listeners find you online?
Absolutely. Well, if I think the best place is if they go to my website, martinparnell.com, they'll find everything there. Also, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, so that's great. But yeah, if you go there, you can see I recently did a TED Talk, which I'd love to share with people. Life is a Relay, which is pretty interesting. And so, yeah, and also they can contact me. So I'd be happy to hear from any of the listeners. Shoot me a line, any thoughts they have. Absolutely. Just let's get in touch.
Fabulous. And it is a great TED Talk. I've watched that a couple times myself. So yes, everyone check out Martin's TED Talk as well as his two books that are currently released. So we've got Marathon Quest and Running to the Edge. Martin, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with our audience today. And thank you to all of the Healthy Life Redesigners out there for tuning in. Now it's time to get out there and to implement what you've learned today. Remember that transformational change occurs one small action at a time. I look forward to seeing you back again next week with more advice and inspiration to help you to own your health and live a life you love. Bye for now.